I'm Sarah Faye Goldman, and just last month, in June of 2009, Eric Jorgensen and I, attending the VBC, went to the home of David Renner and Laura Dalton, where Laura, actually doing another lecture elsewhere, left David to completely impromptu build us a top bar beehive and lecture on it simultaneously, which he did very well.
It was amazing. Now, a top bar beehive is a very popular type of hive to have in urban settings because it's relatively small and easy to keep. And the principle is basically it's a box with bars across it that have frames hanging down that the bees build their hives on.
Pretty simple design, but innovative compared to traditional beekeeping. And here's David.
Welcome to our little backyard. My name is David Renner, and everyone's come together here today. They're going to learn a little bit about top bar hives, and I'll tell you a little bit about why we got into top bar hives to start off with. We were interested, my wife and I, in getting into beekeeping in the most inexpensive way that we could get into beekeeping, and we started trying to find some kind of junk-oriented beekeeping structure that you could build out of trash that you would find on a construction site. And so, short of a little bit of beeswax, everything that you see here is trash off of a job site somewhere, one place or another. We got a primary function here to give the bees enough room to move around and keep them dry so the rain stays off them. That's what this lid is about. And so you want something that's going to be totally waterproof over the top of your hive. However you manage to do that, it can be a little round roof like this, it can be a shed roof. We've got a couple of other hives that have corrugated fiberglass roofing on them, and we also have one with a wood top and a plastic top in other locations. But inside of a top bar hive, set this aside here. It is really simple inside of a top bar hive. This is just a piece of Douglas fir. So any kind of framing lumber from a construction site, a piece of 2x4 that's left over, a chunk of 4x4, anything that you can run through a table saw if you have one, you can make these top bars. And it's just a piece of wood, rectangular piece of wood. It's got a couple little cuts on the end of it that make it snap into place on the top here. And these are actually cut with a slight bevel to the outside, this last piece. So if any water does manage to get its way down under the cover and gets onto the top of these, it's still gonna roll off downhill and go outside. And as you can see, if I take a few more of these out of here, the side of this is also not cut flat. It's left as the board is when it comes out of the mill. And that, again, if any water makes its way down in here, it's going to roll back off the side and stay out of this hive because we want to keep them dry. They can manage the temperature as long as they have some ventilation. And so you want to keep them dry, and then you have these top bars. And the story about the top bar and how this plays into colony collapse disorder, as I understand it, people have been keeping bees in the United States for a really long time. And they started off with just simple boxes. And I actually have something a little bit smaller here I'll show you. So if we go back to like early beekeeping days, they would have probably been working like something like this. This is a smaller hive, it's a nuke hive, and I carry around in the back of my truck waiting for my wife to call me. And also because I spend a lot of time on job sites, but this is just a small version of the same thing. This hive would not be big enough to keep a colony of bees in for the whole summer. They would quickly run out of room in here. And so we have on this hive, in the top here, you can see that we've rabbited out the side of these a little ways. The bees can make it through that space, and you'd be able to set another hive box on top of this with more top bars in it. And there's an example of this up here behind you. And in the normal bee world, they would call it a super, but it's another place for bees to build honeycomb up in the top. And so most of the working bees in that particular box are in the bottom half of it. That's where the brood hive is. That's where they're making the babies. If they need to make a new queen, they're going to make her down there. But they're going to store their honey up in the top of that. So we'll set this one here aside. Also, once again, all made out of garbage. Now, that falling back to the colony collapse disorder and its association with the standard beehive. And there may be someone here that has some reservation about this, but I'm just going to tell you what the story is. So they started keeping hives. First, they just put frames in. Then they put frames in with wire. Then they put frames in with wire and wax paper, all in a rectangular frame that held it down inside of the box. Then at some point, some clever fella or madame somewhere figured out that, hey, if we take this wax paper that we're putting in here and we put it through this special printing press that can print, I'm going to grab something out of here real quick. There's some foam in here. If we can print this wax paper, then we can put the little hexagons right on there with our special printing press that prints on wax paper. Then when the bees get ready to do something like make honey or make babies or all that, they're going to go onto the surface and they're going to go, wow, it's already laid out for us. This is easy. We already know what size to make the pieces. So they would build their comb out straight off the side of this wax paper that was printed with these little combs on it. So that went on for a while, and it got to be what it got to be, and people started keeping bees as very successful. And then another clever person came along and said, hey, what happens if we make those cells a little bit bigger than we were making them before? How about if we make them just a tiny bit bigger? So they made them a little bit bigger. They got two things. They got bigger bees, because the bees, when the pupa are forming in here, they take up the whole space inside the cell. So if you make a bigger cell, you get bigger bees. And you also have a bigger place to put honey, so you get more honey. So, okay, so it's good this size. Let's make it a little bit even bigger than that. Let's make it a little bit bigger. Let's keep making them bigger and see how big we can make them. And so they're thinking, let's have a little honey on it. They're thinking that part of the colony collapse disorder syndrome is that they made the cells eventually too big. And also because they were making the cells the same size all the time, the mites, which are a big problem with bees, the bees in a natural world, they vary the size of their cells in their honeycomb, and they kind of control and they can change the size, and that controls the mites that get in with the pupa. And so it disrupts them, and it's just like organic gardening. It's kind of like crop rotation. So if the bees can change the size, then it screws up the mites. But if everything's always the same size, the mites can accompany themselves and they can get to the right size. So that's kind of the story behind the top bar hive. It's real popular in the third world because why? You can build it out of garbage. Pretty good deal. So anyway, this piece of burlap in here, by the way, the bees try to patch up all their holes that they find in their hive, la la la. On and on they go through. If they get to this burlap here and put some propolis on it to try to close up a hole, it's not going to stick everything together. This will have sawdust in it for insulation in the wintertime. We got two different kinds of top bars here. This top bar has a dado ripped down the middle of it, and it's filled with beeswax. And they'll build their comb straight down off this beeswax. This is another kind. It's got the dado once again in it, but here we have a little strip of wood that we've glued in there, and they'll build down off this. This is supposed to be a little stronger. Cutting these little pieces, really hard to come by, little pieces of wood this size. The only way you can probably get them is from a table saw. A lot of people just do away with this and put the beeswax in. This would want to be waxed with beeswax. Just take a piece of beeswax and go across it, and it gives them a little clue. Here's your spot. Oh, one more thing about this before I take it open. All these are numbered in here, and the reason that they're numbered inside this box is that you're going to go into your bees sometime during the bee season, and you're going to take a look around because you want to look for mites, you want to see what's going on, you want to see maybe you can find the queen, how they're doing, if there's honey. And so when you take one of these out of here, number 15, for example, when you put it back, you want to put it back where number 15 went. And the other thing unique about these top bars, you'll see that there's a skinny kind of two-part one here at the beginning. This one here is real critical, a thin one that's part of a full one, because when you go in here, they're going to have this whole thing glued together. And you got to have yourself a way to get some room so that you can start working in there. So when you come in here with your B-bar, you're going to get this one out of here, and then you're going to be able to pry the rest of these along the line. So this is an inch and a half wide. And an inch and a half is an available size of dimension lumber at Home Depot. You can buy a piece of wood that's pretty much this size in a big long 8-foot stick at Home Depot if that's the way you want to go. But the size of this is critical because an inch and a half here gives you this 3/4 of an inch or a little bit less on both sides of this. And that's going to, when they build their comb down off of here, it's going to give the bees place, they call it bee space, to crawl around between the two combs that are going inside of there. And this might be a good time to go open the window here. So there's bees in both these hives. Who knows, probably 45, 50,000 bees here. And there's a little observation port here so you can kind of see what's going on. And you can see the side of these combs that they've built down inside of here. And the bees are all working in there.
That's a top bar too?
These are top bars. Both of these hives are top bar hives.
So they naturally want to make, just put the comb straight down?
Yep, they put the comb straight down. Now, I'm going to close this up because it's kind of daytime and, you know, it's kind of interrupting their thing. I'll show you in this other one here, which is kind of a hybrid hive. Now, this hive here, you're going to need to get back into and do some work in here. That's why we got the scaffolding up here. It's permanent for our house here. My wife can get up here and walk around and tend the bees. And she's not in any danger of falling. And this one here, the object of the game in this hive is not to go in here. And so they started out real good, going across here, and then eventually they started to go like this here. So these last couple of pieces that they've got in here probably cross the bottoms of 2 or 3 combs inside of this hive. But it's not a problem because we're not going to be going in here for honey later. We can leave this part alone. And so they're going to be putting their honey up in these top two, and they actually have quite a bit of honey going up in here right now. And it's kind of nice to have a little window, right? Yeah, sure. Once again, tapered on the bottom. So if water heads down this direction, it's going to run down and get out of here. And one other thing that I'll mention about this particular location that we're keeping bees here, totally urban. We're on a city lot here. These two hives back up to the alley on the back of our property. We're in our backyard all the time. You notice I'm not worried about getting stung here. And the reason I'm not worried about getting stung here in this urban situation with two beehives and 50,000 bees in my backyard is because the entrance here is 7 feet off the ground. Is there anybody here 7 feet tall? No, there's nobody here 7 feet tall. And so these bees, when they're coming in here from all the blackberries and all the flowers that are in my neighborhood and my garden and stuff like that, they're flying in and they never bother coming below 7 feet because why should they? Their hole is up there. Now, if these hives were down here on the ground, we'd be worried about raccoons getting after them. And the other thing that we'd be worried about is we'd be in their flight path. Anytime that we were standing out here and bees were coming in from any direction around here, they'd be flying to try to get past us, and they will sting you if you're in the way. So get them up high off the ground somehow is my advice to this whole situation here. So let's see. And then the other reason, you'll see some rope here. We had a big windstorm came through Portland about a week and a half ago. So I just came out here in a hurry. These weren't secured down. They probably should be secured down to the top of the shed so the wind doesn't get at them. But I just ran out here with some rope and tossed it over the top and tied them down so they wouldn't wander away on us and we lose our bees. Anybody got any questions so far?
I was going to add just a piece of information.
Sure, go ahead.
Which is that the three quarters is about, like, if it's less than three quarters, they can't move around. And if you give them more than three quarters, they won't build straight. They won't build straight down. They'll start building comb that builds into each other. It becomes a lot harder to harvest the honey, which is why you want three quarters.
Right. So don't go freeballing the whole thing and say, okay, I'm just going to make it whatever size I want. There are some things that you do have to pay attention to when it comes to bees, and bee space is a critical deal. So we'll just throw you a couple more things about this hive. This is a hive that's made of plywood. And it's just got these legs on it because this is what I had around. And if we were going to actually put this out in the wild somewhere, we'd probably get it so it was standing up a little taller somewhere, and then put something down here so we could weight it down so it would stay where we put it. Bears can be a problem if you're out somewhere suburban. You know, there are bears in Oregon. In the bottom here, we got screen mesh. Tried a couple things. Screen mesh seems to be a good one for ventilation. This has also got a ventilation hole on the outside here so the air can come up and go through. The bees, actually, to keep the hive at the right temperature, they got all kinds of plans. But as you can see, the screen is on the outside of structure here. And the reason for that is the bees can get up here on this circle on the inside, and they fan. They can actually move the air. They get together, and bees are real smart. So they can push air, pull it up through here, and get it out of here. And that's going to be a way for them to stay cool. Here on the other end, we got the entry, right? And it's got a couple of wine corks here. That's a good size for the hole, wine cork size. I think it's a 3/4. And there's three holes, and they're going to be using all these when they get to working. But if you go and buy a bee pack at, like, Rural Bee Supply out in Gladstone, when you put your bees in there, you're going to want to cover these up. Because until they get a workforce going and they're doing their thing, coming in and out all the time, they needed this little extra protection to keep the bad guys out. Because hornets will come in here, yellow jackets will come in here, other kinds of bees will come in here, steal honey. Other bees from other hives that are in the neighborhood will come in and steal honey. So we got to give them a little extra protection. But after they get going, you can get all this out of here. And then one more thing about this hive right here. This is a landing zone here on the end. You're coming in, you're all heavy, you got honey, you got nectar, you got some pollen hanging on your legs. And when you see them come in here at 3 o'clock this afternoon, they're just going to be kind of flying like real loaded 747s. So you got to have a place to land, and you can see it's a little bit tilted. And that's because you got your legs and you got to get in there and land, right? So when you're coming in to land, you want to be able to have a little clearance for your wings. So you can come in here and land on this. And this is a piece of teak, so we don't have to worry about it doing anything, rotting or any of that. It's real hardwood. They're going to come in here and be able to keep this clean. So, and there's teak on construction sites. And pallets, stuff that comes shipped from Indonesia. They're sending the granite sinks that come for the condominium. It's going to be shipped on some kind of Asian hardwood that's going to be coming in there. So that's your landing zone. The one more thing about the screen here in the bottom, it's got to be small enough so bees can't get through it. You don't want anybody going through the bottom, at all. You want to get some small space there for them. Quarter inch won't do. You need that eighth inch hardware mesh down there on the bottom. I didn't have a big enough piece of hardware mesh. We're building off garbage here, remember. So we didn't have a big enough mesh, small enough mesh for this other side. I didn't have any, so I took a couple quarter inch pieces and I overlapped them. And there's another bar here to kind of hold them together down there on the bottom. So we get that eighth inch space that the bees can't come through. In the winter time, this has to be closed up. This whole bottom wants to be closed up hard, so that they can maintain their temperature inside of there. And so let me see. Okay, so you want to build a top bar hive?
While you're getting ready, I have a really kind of broad question. I'm not as experienced with the bees.
Sure.
And it would be helpful to know more about what the difference is between, I understand this top bar design. Can you speak a little about the conventional, just the specific changes that are made?
A conventional hive is a box, square box. Everybody's seen them. their eyes painted some color, and you can see them setting out in the field. When those hives come, you get the square box, and then you get the frames, and then you get foundation, and you put all that together. The foundation's kind of the wax paper thing. Sometimes it comes with the printed cells on it, sometimes it doesn't. It depends what you get. But you just assemble these, and they hang in a hive just like these top bars hanging here. But the thing about them that's different is that they're all coming off some production facility somewhere, and so you got to go buy them.
And the bees are more guided because the thing goes all the way down?
The bees are going to build that whole frame full, and they're going to build straight on it. You know, it's not like this where there's nature taking its course, you know, and you're maybe going to get some loopy ones. When we go into this right hive back here to get honey, all those combs are also attached to the side inside. And so you got to, you know, work out this little one at the beginning and kind of make yourself some room to get we use a big, long salmon fillet knife, real thin, long knife. And you can get in there after you get one of them out of the end there. You can get in and actually just run it down the side of the hive and cut everybody loose. And you can run it carefully down between them as well to, like, separate everything so you can actually get them out of there. And, you know, all that stuff's expensive, you know. To go get that stuff, and the idea here is, you know, third world, you know, this is what they got. They got some boards, you know, they maybe got some old hacked up saw of some kind that they're going to use to do their thing. So, you know, it's inexpensive to do it this way. It's nature's deal. They're building their comb. They're going to decide what size their little cells are. They're going to control the mite population, hopefully, you know, and that's a major difference, I guess.
How do you close that up in the winter? You screw a board up?
Yep, screw a board right up on the bottom of there. The one thing that I do know about bees is that it's pointless to try to keep them warm in the wintertime. We have some documents, real old stuff that's here, and there's one guy who was just set. He was just set. He was going to keep his bees warm in the winter. It was going to be better for the bees, and it never worked out for him. So they do have an ability to keep themselves warm enough to go into their thing. We're going to copy this hive. This hive's made out of plywood, so it's painted. And that's to keep track. It's not painted on the inside. I'm trying to keep the tools here to an absolute minimum today. If I was going to build another one of these myself, I'd probably haul out a bunch of stuff from the basement, like a slide saw, and be able to cut these boards real perfect straight. And I'm going to use a jigsaw, because I'm going to be able to do that with a jigsaw. And we're going to make a hive that's 3 feet long. I got a mark here at 2 feet, I think. We'll make a square mark across the board here. And because I work with wood all the time, and cedar I work with quite a bit, you can become sensitized to cedar, which I am. But it's probably a good policy anytime you're working with wood to wear a dust mask. This is a N95 dust mask. You'll notice it has two straps on it, not one little blue strap. The little blue strap dust masks are not going to do a thing for your health. They're just going to make you go into places that are more dangerous than you should be in anyway. Don't ever buy those blue strap ones. They're junk.
Do you get, like, for a normal hive, conventional hive to a top bar, what produces more honey? Do you know?
Probably a hive that conventional hive. The whole thing about that, those kind of hives, is, you know, production honey. Mm-hmm. You know, so that when you go to Fred Meyer or wherever you're going to go and buy some honey, they're going to have some, you know. And they're, you know, they're like any other businessman. They're trying to make as much money as possible. This kind of beekeeping here is more about the environment for us.
Does it produce year-round honey?
No, it hasn't. It might this year since we have two hives. But, you know, last year we just got a couple quarts, but so we have a little satellite garden across the street at our neighbor's house, which we're also kind of community farming with our neighbor, and we have ripe tomatoes over there. And, you know, they got pollinated by these bees. And the other thing that's really funny about this is that, you know, our neighbors all know that we keep bees, and when we first started keeping bees, they said, well, we never see any bees. And now they're saying, well, we see bees in our yard, you know, there are bees. They're coming from our house and flying to the neighbors. And so here we go back to what we're doing.
Growing plants.
Work up that line here and make sure it's straight.
Do you mind if I bring something else up while you do this?
No, go ahead.
There's kind of, it's a more political side of things. So, I know a lot of people make ethical food choices.
Right.
And they don't eat honey.
Right.
And I haven't, you know, really gotten, I haven't bridged that yet. To my understanding, it's because the bees in production hives are made to produce more honey than they naturally would, and so the feeling is that the bees are being abused.
Right.
What would you say a non-abusive amount of harvesting honey is? I mean, do you have a feel for that?
I don't.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what to make of this dilemma. I mean, we can't ask the bees. Like, do you mind taking extra honey?
I would say that you should take a little bit the first year, and if your bees survive the winter because they need that honey to get through the winter, then you probably did okay.
Right.
And you could probably take a little bit more.
I've also heard that there's a new trend to, like, most people harvest in the fall, but sort of the new, more considerate trend is to harvest in the spring after they've eaten all the honey that they
need
for
not,
the winter.
It's not their winter honey.
Leftovers.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you have an idea of how many times a year, though? I mean, it's normally done just once a year?
I mean, it depends on how many hives you have. Usually, because it's such a big ordeal, people only go in to harvest once a year.
I see.
If you open the hives and take the honey out and take the bees off the comb and store the comb away where they can't get it, it's just a lot of work and you get really messy.
How do you get the bees off?
You can use a brush. Yeah. Or you hit it really hard and most of them fall off.
Just like getting ants off of your apple. Just to get them off.
You can get, conventional hives, you can get special tops where the bees will go down into the brood and they can't get back up into that super.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You know, and then I've also put them in the back of a truck and kind of driven around until the bees just kind of got off.
when we harvested honey last year, my wife and her sister was here out of town. And they came to harvest some honey out of these hives last year, and it was probably late July that they were after some honey. They both came out here. Neither one of them had any bee suit on at all. And they successfully harvested honey out of the hive. Nobody got bit. And I came out here and took pictures of it. She was there taking the comb out of the hive, slicing with the big knife. None of the bees bit her. So, you know, I mean, it probably has to, you know, it's a lot like probably a lot of other things. If you're considerate of whatever you're doing, you're probably going to get away with it. Mm-hmm. And if you're inconsiderate, you're probably not going to get away with it. Yeah. So I'm going to let me see here. I think I'm going to put like 3 fasteners down the side here.
So how do honeybees get conditions just like you're doing in the wild? I mean, it seems like they don't
get a condition like that. I mean, that's a box made of plywood holes drilled in the end of it, you know.
So they're able to produce honey in the wild and have hives and all that.
Right.
But they don't have to have all this. It kind of seems pretty...
The reason that this is all removable, I mean, if we were totally into the bees, we would just put a plywood top on that with some dados down the middle of it, and we'd be done. Take it, set it out in the woods, and we'd walk away, right? Because we would never be going back in there. Because that would all be about the bees, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be totally about the bees. It wouldn't be about ever getting any honey out of it or managing the swarm or the mites or anything. We would just be, you know, going and putting them out there for the health of the planet. And, you know, I mean, you're putting all this time into it. A bundle of bees costs 50 or 60 bucks from Rural, you know. So, you know, it'd be nice to get something out of it, right? I mean, everybody likes a little honey in their tea or whatever. You know, it's fun to cook with honey. And so we're trying to get something back. Yes, we are trying to get something back. But, you know, the bees up here in the front, I suppose when we're leaving, there's a couple chunks of wood up there. I don't know if you saw. There's a couple of rounds that were cut off with dug fir. And they got a hole in the middle of them. They were rotted out. Well, that's what your bees would be looking for in the wild, is something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually got brought over here by a friend of ours, and he said, hey, you know, maybe this will make you a good hive that you can just leave out somewhere. And I'm the kind of guy that might be known to take and put a hive out somewhere and just leave it there and not go back to it, you know, because why not, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't cost me anything, and it's kind of amusing to go back and go, hey, it's got bees in it, you know, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but those ones that are out in front, those trees only have a hole about this big rotted out of them, and I've been trying to figure out how to cut a big hole in there. And I'll come up with a plan here one of these days.
Well, plus if you ever want to start selling green beehives, you know,
right.
You could get really green chic with that, you know, shellacked, hollowed out,
right.
Real live log. Yeah.
I wouldn't be doing that, but somebody might be. So I've laid out a couple holes here in the end of this, and I don't think I need this dust mask anymore. I'm kind of done cutting. We'll save that for another day. Average homeowner would probably get a year out of a dust mask. So, you know, save them. Don't just throw them away. So, we're going to use these stainless fasteners. And we're using stainless fasteners because, well, there's nothing ever going to happen to these stainless fasteners. It's like the silverware in your drawer at home. Use stainless because it doesn't rust, doesn't tarnish. Stainless is friendly to cedar. The two of those get along pretty well. So, you know, stainless is a good thing outdoors. It's going to be outdoors. And I've chosen a little bit larger bit here. And we're going to drill some pilot holes through here. And this bit is big enough for the whole screw to go through. So it's not going to suck up on this at all when we try to tighten stuff together. And I've laid out the inside dimensions of this hive that we were using for an example here. And I've marked a couple holes. I'm going to put three fasteners on each side. I'm going to drill both boards at the same side. Because I'm going to be on the outside of this, I'm going to go ahead and drill my holes to the outside of this. The board is 3/4 inch thick, so I'm just going to kind of eyeball what 3/8 looks like, and I'm going to try to drill straight. And we'll see what happens here. So, I've got a loose bit. Okay. And I'm going to square this down a little bit here. We're going to put the rough side on the outside. We're going to put this board. These are cedar. Not quite sure what grade of cedar it is, but it's rough on one side and smooth on the other side. It's been sanded on this side. That's why it's smooth. This is just where it came through a bandsaw someplace. So now I'm going to switch bits. When you're working with wood and screws, you can go ahead and just try to tunnel your way through whatever you're working on. And you're probably going to end up splitting everything. So this drill bit that I've got chosen now is just a tiny bit smaller than this stainless steel screw shank. And that's going to be a pilot hole. And these are pretty long screws. I'm actually probably not going to go all the way down in there. But how am I going to line this up so it looks good when I'm done? Square this down so I kind of see what's going on here. And yeah, I guess you wouldn't really need a square. You know, you could use a book or whatever you needed to get square. You are probably going to need a tape measure or something. What I'm going to do here is stand one of these up, the rough side out. I'm going to look that board over for a minute. I want the better side, I think, to be at the top. This got a little corner chink on the end of it there. I'm going to hold this down far enough at the top so I can get a top bar on there. So I'm just kind of marking where they're going to lay out here, right? But you notice I didn't drill them all the way through? Because I can't really tell from up here standing on top if I'm in the middle of that board, and I want to drill straight down into it for that pilot hole. So I'm going to set that aside. And I missed this one here by about 1/8 inch, and I'm going to get myself over in the middle there, and then I'm really going to put the pilot hole in. I get paid a lot of money to do that on a regular basis. That probably helps. I'm a journeyman union carpenter. You guys hang on 1 minute. I'm going to go get one more thing here. Toilet ring wax. Unused, of course. If you're going to drive long screws, you buy a toilet ring over to Home Depot or Lowe's or something. They cost $1. Get the most basicest one that they have. It's a little ring. Put it in your salsa container. Some people use soap, but if you try to do this with soap, it all just comes off. So you end up not getting any to stick to the screw. This stuff sticks to the screw. And it's a real good screw lube. And these particular stainless screws came from the Rebuilding Center in Portland. You guys don't know about that over on Mississippi Avenue. They have plenty of junk over there to build one of these.
So what does the wax do?
It's a lubrication for the screw. thing about stainless is it's really slippery. So if you're trying to cut it or use a screw drill to drill it, it's hard for the bit to engage and get a really good bite on there. So you put a little lube on there, it's going to go in easier. I'm going to back this one out a little bit. You know, I don't know if you noticed it was slipping a little bit there, my bit was.
I
use that lube whenever I'm driving long screws, even with pilot holes.
Is that just plain paraffin?
No, it's got a little technology in it, probably, you know. I mean, I'm green, and I like the environment and all that, but, you know, there's some stuff like insulation. And, you know, I mean, it's okay to fall back on technology a little bit as long as you're wise about it, you know. And there's all kinds of horror stories every time you start, you know. People have all kinds of excuses not to do the right thing. So they're not going to put compact fluorescent bulbs in their house because of the mercury, right? Well, you know, you take an incandescent bulb and burn coal to make electricity, and you got all kinds of mercury coming out of the power plant. But, you know, they don't know that part. Coming in with my pilot bit again here. And I'm just kind of matching up my reveal that I ended up with here on the other side. We're doing pretty good here, it looks like. Okay, that's a pretty cheap way to get some B-box, huh?